We'll proceed to the third case of the day, Rodas v. Shields. Mr. Stein.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The issue in this case, which arises from a summary judgment on the issue of the statute of limitations, is whether the evidence in the record, the unmistakable evidence in the record and attached to the motion for summary judgment that was granted, whether that raises a genuine issue of material fact. And of course, we submit it does. First of all, there were two motions for summary judgment that are in the record in this case, and Mr. Shields relies heavily on his first motion and inferences that he claims can be drawn from that first motion. But the trial court's order on the first motion for summary judgment was that the motion was denied. No part of that motion was granted. No partial summary judgment was granted. And so the only issue in this case is the summary judgment that was rendered on the second motion for summary judgment. That motion had attached to it numerous documents, one or more of which raised an issue as to Mr. Brodas' mental competence and legal ability as a matter of disability to enter into the underlying contracts and whether that disability told the statute of limitations.
Can you direct me to those documents, please?
Yes.
Attached to the second motion?
Yes. It was the deposition of David Cochran, if memory serves. David Cochran is an accountant, and he was Mr. Brodas' accountant. Tellingly, not important for this case, because Mr. Cochran was Mr. Brodas' accountant both before and after he suffered the traumatic brain injury. So Mr. Cochran can give us perspective about Mr. Brodas' mental abilities both before and after he suffered the brain injury.
As far as his representation, he was his accountant. What about attorneys? Was there a sequence of attorneys? I was trying to figure that out.
Yes.
You came in later.
I did. So Mr. Brodas filed the complaint with a gentleman named Ariel Weisberg in state court. It was removed to federal court. And I think the next attorney was Williams and Montgomery. There might have been an intervening one. I came in after Williams and Montgomery, and I left too. And then another lawyer came in, Abe Brustein, then still another lawyer, and I'm back again. So Mr. Brodas could not maintain positive.
This is kind of a belated thing about his mental capacity, at least to me it is. And you came and you left and came back and whatever, but there seems to be some, I don't know what the attorneys thought of along the way. Not that we're asking for their testimony, but obviously this guy's hard to get along with.
Yes, he is.
And whether that's a mental capacity or he's just that kind of a person, is very difficult to manage or what. And I'm kind of confused about where we're trying to go here to basically toll the statute of limitations.
Right. Our contention is that there is a genuine issue of material fact on the issue of whether Mr. Brodas was legally disabled at the time this cause of action arose, which under the applicable state law would toll the running of the statute of limitations during the time of his disability. He only missed the statute, according to Mr. Shields' arguments, by a couple of months, so we don't need much tolling, not that it would matter on summary judgment. Our contention is that he was legally disabled, and it wasn't just that he was just difficult to get along with, and we have evidence in the record of that. Edward Hayes testified, and
In what proceeding and in what part of the record did he testify?
He testified in discovery. He gave a deposition from Virginia, and he testified that he interacted with Mr. Brodas before the collision, before the brain injury, and that Mr. Hayes was the representative of World Kitchens that was the tenant of, and the custom, you know, this building was built for World Kitchens.
The ones that were not paying rent.
That's right. Well, Mr. Hayes doesn't know anything about that because he wasn't there then. But what Mr. Hayes testifies to, which is relevant to these proceedings, is that Mr. Brodus was a professional, a mover and shaker. He was he had the best deal. There's no evidence that Mr. Brodus was difficult to get along with or had difficulty maintaining relationships before the collision. And that goes to whether this is just a personality problem or whether it's a mental disability.
Can you direct me in the record to where the trial judge on the second motion for summary judgment had those materials before her, where those materials were designated as responsive documents, as Rule 56 requires, or supporting evidence in opposition to the motion?
It wasn't submitted in opposition to the motion. It was submitted as an attachment to the motion itself. Mr. Hayes' deposition testimony, if memory serves, was attached to the motion that was granted, and the trial court judge, when she was evaluating the testimony, she compared, I believe, if memory serves, Mr. Hayes' testimony to Mr. Brodus' testimony.
Right, but where was the issue raised? I guess that's another subset of the same point. Where was the issue of his competency raised in response to the second motion for summary judgment?
It was not. I did not raise it. I don't know that I knew about it. Certainly didn't know the extent of it, and didn't have a full sort of parallax view that I have now. So we concede. We did not raise mental competence below. We raise it. It was in the papers. I mean, it was in the complaint. It was in the discovery motions. We did not raise that issue in response to the motion for summary judgment. And we're asking you to address it because it only becomes clear when reading the whole record, I think. At least that's our contention. The issue of whether Mr. Brodus was mentally disabled or legally disabled is, under state law, whether he was incapable of managing his person or property, or he cannot comprehend his rights, or the nature of the acts giving rise to the claim. Now, he was incapable of managing his person. That is undisputed. Nobody contests it. He was wheelchair-bound. He could not perform the normal activities of daily living. He could not walk. Paralyzed basically from the waist down. He could not comprehend basic concepts, according to the testimony of Mr. Cochran, such as whether Mr. Cochran had certain documents. Mr. Cochran testified, and it's attached to the summary judgment motion, I believe, that he would have to repeatedly tell Mr. Brodus that he didn't have certain documents. Brodus would continually ask for them nonetheless.
But you got all these lawyers in and out, you among them, and if this incompetency keeps occurring, either they all knew about it and say, I don't want to represent him anymore, or there is some other reason. But that's why I find that here we are past the statute of limitations, but during that time period, they had lots of lawyers that could have said something or done something if this were really the problem.
Mr. Brodus is very good at hiding his disability. And we don't need to prove that he was disabled in March of 2008 when the statute of limitations would have come and gone sometime during that year. All we have to have is some issue of fact as to whether Mr. Brodus was legally disabled for 2 months from the time of the underlying acts, 2 or 3 months, because the underlying state law tolls the statute of limitations, and so Mr. Brodus is entitled to a full 5 years of mental abilities before he would be required to. So if he was mentally disabled from March to June of 2003, then the statute of limitations starts to run in June of 2003, and he would have had till June of 2008 to file the complaint.
Well, just curiosity, when did you come back into the picture?
I came back only for these proceedings. I did not go back in front of the district court.
Have you or anyone else instituted guardianship proceedings over him?
We have not. And it's been talked about. It's not in the record, but it's been talked about in the record. Mr. Cochran.
Yeah, there's something in there about guardianship.
Mr. Cochran said he thinks Mr. Brodus needs a guardian, but couldn't bring himself to institute guardianship proceedings because it would break Mr. Brodus's heart, according to Mr. Cochran.
Was he married?
Mr. Brodus?
Yeah.
You know, that's the best evidence of his disability. He, according to the records in the courthouse in Rolling Meadows, Illinois, he's married, but he claims not to be married. He claims it was a ruse that someone...
Does he have home care? Yeah, you have to have something.
He does. He can't get in and out of bed. He can't do... He needs help with every activity. If you put food in front of him, he can eat it, but he can't get around and can't toilet himself.
Didn't he in 2003, though, represent to the state court in Illinois that he was competent and an adjudication was made, finding that he had regained competency?
Yes. Mr. Broda said to the state court in Lake County, I'm competent. But the doctor supporting that issue said that Mr. Brodus could manage his affairs with assistance from others, and that's in the doctor's report. It's in the proceedings. The judge terminated the guardianship proceedings, but did not address the issue of whether Mr. Brodus needed the assistance of others to manage his affairs. Now, Judge, you asked about how come all these lawyers didn't notice, and the answer. What's that?
They knew something. They didn't want to represent him or something, or he fired him. I don't know what happened.
No, I think it's fair to say that he's a difficult man to get along with. He's a difficult man to represent in litigation. I don't know that the full nature of his disability became clear until these proceedings, until the end of the trial court proceedings. If he were here today, he'd tell you he's fine. But if you asked him about meeting you, this afternoon, he would not remember.
Well, how is he going to even verify the fact that it wasn't until July or whatever it was that he found out that they were paying the rent?
Yeah, that's going to be very difficult on remand.
Because he's already said he doesn't remember.
That's right. That's right. We'd have to use other sources, more reliable sources of evidence.
What authority does this court have to create an issue of fact over evidence based on evidence that wasn't designated to the trial court below? In response to the motion for summary judgment?
I cited cases in the brief. There's a case where in an immigration case, an individual conceded that the statute of limitations had passed in the trial court. No one addressed it in the trial court, and this court chose to accept, to disregard that concession on appeal because the individual involved had a language, but didn't speak English. Mr. Brodus has a barrier himself. It's actually more difficult. He looks normal, but he's imprisoned in his disability. And so there are those cases that you have wide discretion to address issues that, for good reason, if you feel, were not addressed in the trial court. And it's de novo review, and Mr. Shields had full knowledge of at least the issue of decline or decreased cognitive abilities. That's my answer to your question. Mr. Shields argues on appeal that you shouldn't reverse the summary judgment because Mr. Brodus had some abilities. He could grasp certain concepts. And this is a summary judgment issue. This is a factual issue. Whether Mr. Brodus was legally disabled, whether he had the ability to manage his person and his property, or to comprehend his rights, or the nature of the acts, those are factual determinations that are fact-intensive. We'll need doctor's testimony. We can look at Mr. Brodus' own deposition, which is telling. But it's certainly not a reason to affirm summary judgment.
No. Of course, the problem here is attorney's fees. If the only way he's going to get around these attorney's fees, I guess, is to reverse the summary judgment and go back to ground zero and start over.
We're asking you to do.
Yeah, and this is huge for both sides. I assume Mr. Broadus has run up a huge amount of attorney's fees.
Yes, he has. Yeah, not as much as...
lawyers and everything, so what you got, what is it, 800,000 or so? Judgment against him, and he may have a similar amount that he owes or is paid. I don't know.
His fees were much more modest than that, the fees that he's incurred, yes. And that is a big issue. I mean, the $800,000 in legal fees is a huge amount for what is a relatively cut-and-dried case. Now, some of that can be attributed to Mr. Brodus's difficulties, but not all of it, and certainly not the greater part of it. It's going to be challenging on remand. Mr. Brodus is going to have to remain represented. We have to seek, have to ignore him, and we're going to have to seek alternative sources of proof of his legal disability. I see my time is up. I'd just like to reserve the balance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stein. Ms. Mateus?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'd like to start out with a comment about de novo review. As Your Honor asked, there was no de novo review because this issue was not raised before Judge St. Eve. And so this is the first time that it's being raised. As far as, and what I would like to do is refer to the summary judgment record. And the summary judgment record is the motion, the answer, the reply, and very importantly, the 56.1 submissions and answers. What is really telling here is that in the 56.1 submissions and answers, this disability issue was never raised. Mm-hmm. It was not raised in the so-called objection. There was no argument on it. There was no law on it. And there was no facts on it. And the 56.1 is silent. So there is no review. There is no de novo review. Judge St. Eve never considered this. Judge St. Eve never ruled on it. And it's being raised for the very first time before Your Honors. As far as the Cochran, the accountant deposition, and the filing of it in the district court, we did not file it in support of our renewed motion for summary judgment. We made one tiny reference to it in our 56.1 statement concerning the 03 transaction, the 2003 transaction, and because what is required to file the transcript as a whole, if you're going to rely on it, we did file it. But we took one small snippet that only had to do with the 2003 transaction. And what is really of great interest to me, and the statute here is quite specific. We've got 735 Illinois ILCS, which is a tolling statute. That tolling statute was never submitted to Judge St. Eve. And it has a very high standard. It's not a difficult personality. I took this gentleman's deposition for 3 days. I spent quality time with him. He graded me on my questions. He graded me on my billings. He gave me a very tough time, as anybody who reads that transcript will see. And I spent 3 days with him. But the statute that's at hand now, for the first time before Your Honor, says, incapable of managing property. There is nothing in the record that indicates that this gentleman is incapable of managing property. But there's a second prong to it. And unable to comprehend the rights or act giving rise to a cause of action. This gentleman filed this lawsuit. This gentleman has prosecuted this lawsuit. This gentleman has prosecuted this appeal to Your Honors. This gentleman filed an affidavit that said, but for my client's supposed statements that World Kitchen was not paying rent, if he had known that World Kitchen was paying rent, he would have filed on time. So it's from his own affidavit, he says he knew that he wasn't filing, and he gave an excuse as to why he wasn't filing. This is a situation where, as Your Honor pointed out, there was a proceeding in Lake County. The Lake County, based upon a doctor, based upon the guardian ad litem, and based upon Mr. Brodus's own statements, it was terminated. And then Mr. Brodus saw fit to make a transaction with my client. They negotiated it. The record is clear. There were negotiations. There were two assignments for $600,000 in total. He accepted that $600,000 and still has it. In those assignments, he made representations and warranties. He gave releases. And one of the things that's in those assignments is that he had full access to the records of this company. So the law is that if you have such access, the statute of limitations starts to run from when the transaction is completed. Now, there's a comment by counsel as far as that we relied on the first summary judgment motion. We did file a motion for summary judgment very early in the case. Why? Because we wanted to mitigate damages, we wanted to keep the attorney's fees as low as possible, and this lawsuit was a problem for my client. Because being in the real estate industry, when there's a fraud claim pending against you, that's something that you have to disclose to lenders, and it's a very big problem. So very early on, we made a motion to stay discovery because we wanted to end the case, not have any more fees than needed, and it wasn't granted. Why wasn't it granted? Because Mr. Brodus put in an affidavit that said that in the summer of 2003, I had a conversation with Mr. Hayes, and Mr. Hayes said something. Well, and Judge St. Eve said, go do discovery. We did discovery. We took Mr. Hayes' deposition. And this isn't the situation where we have a he said, or something like that, and it's a credibility issue. What Mr. Hayes' deposition disclosed is that there was absolutely no foundation, no basis, no way that anybody could attribute that conversation. Mr. Hayes was no longer an employee of World Kitchen at the time of these rent questions. He was not involved in the lease. He was not involved in rent. He had absolutely no knowledge. He wasn't with that company anymore. So there was absolutely no basis. We did file a 56.1 statement with our renewed motion for summary judgment, and in there we detailed what Mr. Hayes' deposition testimony was and that there's absolutely no basis for that paragraph 19 in the affidavit. And Mr. Brodus, in response to our 56.1 statement, admitted that Mr. Hayes could not have had that information as described in paragraph 19 of Mr. Brodus's deposition, Mr. Brodus's affidavit. When we filed our renewed motion for summary judgment, we met our burden. We established when the cause of action accrued, and we established that the one and only issue at that time was the discovery rule. And we met our burden of showing the accrual date and that the discovery rule was not available to Mr. Brodus. Now, the discovery rule is different from some other issues. When the discovery rule is invoked by Mr. Brodus, the plaintiff here, it's not a genuine issue, a material fact issue. The burden there on Mr. Brodus was to show when did he supposedly make the discovery. And we had negated the one and only basis for such an assertion. So we had Mr. Hayes' affidavit, Mr. Hayes' deposition, I'm sorry. We had the 56.1 admission. But lo and behold, this affidavit surfaces again. And by the way, we also had Mr. Brodus' deposition of 3 days. I took painstaking questions of Mr. Brodus, and it was clear from his deposition that there was absolutely no basis for him to assert what is in paragraph 19 of his affidavit. But that didn't stop him. Put it in again. Two-page objection, no law, no nothing. Again, use the affidavit. What I think is especially troubling is that in the opening brief before Your Honors, Mr. Brodus did not address the discovery rule. There's a couple words in the heading of one of the sections, and then there's a couple words later on. There is nothing in the opening brief about where Judge St. Eve erred, what did she not construe correctly or something. And lo and behold, of course, we objected to that in our brief, and in the reply brief, we get 8 pages and about 12 cases saying, well, Your Honors have discretion, and some cases that are extraordinary cases that have nothing to do with the established precedent from this court, that you cannot raise an issue for the first time before this court, and especially with this record. And lo and behold, Mr. Brodus again uses his affidavit in paragraph 19. And I can tell Your Honor, because I remember this, it's 747 of the transcript, and I remember it because of the airplane. Page 747 of the record. And again, paragraph 19 is there. So, and even to this day before Your Honors, they're using it. in spite of the Hayes deposition, in spite of Brodus's own deposition, this is a situation that really we ask that it be affirmed in total. I think that the discovery rule has been waived before this court. The issue of disability under that Illinois statute was never raised before Judge St. Eve, and there is no record before your honors. There's nothing from a doctor. There's nothing from anybody that says he is incapable of managing his affairs. He did the $600,000 transaction. He filed this lawsuit. He has hired and fired lawyers. He has appeared for his deposition. And what is interesting is that there's a suggestion here that actually he was disabled through the deposition. So they have not identified a starting date. They have not identified an ending date. And they have not identified in between where there's any issue with this gentleman. He is a difficult person. I agree. I had the benefit of that for 3 days. But maybe some people would say that about me, too. But that doesn't make that there's a disability under the Illinois statute. And the record simply does not
Counsel,
support
it. You
that.
Made the comment earlier that it was your intention to try to prompt a speedy resolution of the matter. How does that square with the $966,000 and change in fees that you sought from the trial court?
Judge, I will tell you that this was a very difficult case. I will tell you that we tried to stay it. We tried to end it early. I will tell you that we staffed it with a young partner and an associate. We had detailed records of it to Judge St. Eve. Judge St. Eve reduced it by, I believe it was about 22%. She reduced it by about $145,000. My own time was about 21% of the time, made about 31% of the total fees. This is a two-year exercise. And the issue of the disability was raised in the trial court as far as a part of cause of action. But as far as the statute of limitations, it was never in the summary judgment record. Mm-hmm. So as far as trial preparation, and for example, one of the things that we did is we did monitor other cases of Mr. Brodus because he had a lot of litigation. And
what does that mean, a lot of litigation?
He was involved as a plaintiff and defendant in other cases. And one of the reasons that we looked at those cases is because the timing of the transactions that were involved in those cases related to the time period that was here. I will tell you, I wish it was less, but this was a very difficult case. Discovery, just to get discovery and documents and answers to interrogatories. Plus, we had five sets of lawyers who were changing. There were delays. We didn't know when we were going to be able to depose Mr. Brodus. Everything in this case was basically more difficult than it could have or should have been. So, yes, I acknowledge it's not a small number. Mm-hmm. But I can also tell Your Honor that every single minute was needed. Why was it needed? Because Mr. Brodus saw fit to file this case, and he prosecuted it with many different lawyers. And it was a very difficult experience, as Judge St. Eve experienced with us. And we have not collected that judgment. We're not having an easy time with it. The finances are rather complicated, and so that is still an open issue on which we are working. And there's a suggestion in the a reply brief that there should have been an evidentiary hearing on the fees. There is no law from the circuit that indicates that an evidentiary hearing is needed. There is nothing in the record that suggests that was ever requested before Judge St. Eve. The law from the circuit is actually that the district court does not have to do a line-by-line review. Judge St. Eve obviously did a very careful review here because she reduced it quite substantially and gave her reasons for it. So I hope I've answered Your Honor's question.
Thank you.
I think what is also telling here, Your Honors, is that we have the discovery rule. Why did they abandon it before Your Honors? And then substitute something new that is not in the record. This is a situation where there should be finality. There is a need for finality. That's what we were searching for with the first motion for summary judgment. Okay. Mr. Broda survived that because he put in this affidavit. But then we rolled up our sleeves, we went to work on it, and we showed that there was absolutely no foundation. There was no evidentiary basis for it. And the cases are clear. You cannot defend against summary judgment unless you've got evidentiary facts. And here, the burden was actually to show a discovery date, which was not done. So unless Your Honors have some other questions, I will stop at this point, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Stein, I think your time had expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
What we really ask Your Honors to do is, when looking at the record in this case, look at it from the perspective of a lawyer trying to represent a client who is disabled but is in denial. And all the things that Mr. Shields raises about the difficulties in this case can be explained by that if you look at it from that perspective. Mr. Brodus filed a bunch of lawsuits. I believe there was 9 or 10. I was handling a good number of them when I was representing Mr. Brodus in the court below, and I was being followed around by Mr. Shields' lawyer. They would be outside in the hallway in the Daly Center when I came out after a hearing in a case. That was unnecessary. Mr. Shields did not have to send lawyers to various courtrooms throughout the city to watch what was going on if his true intent was to determine Mr. Brodus's ability, legal abilities, mental abilities in 2003. If they want, they could have just copied the file, subpoenaed the file, read the depositions. They didn't have to follow me around. They sent multiple attorneys to routine court appearances seeking leave to withdraw. 2 lawyers would show up for Mr. Shields. You can't attribute all of those $900,000 in fees to Mr. Brodus's difficult personality. Rather, there was a less palatable explanation we submit. Filing lawsuits, defending lawsuits, doesn't make someone competent. In fact, that's our job as lawyers, is to help people, notwithstanding their disabilities. This one happens to be pretty egregious, but the fact that a lawyer was able to write some words down on a paper and file it with the court, or an affidavit, those are all efforts by a lawyer to get past Mr. Brodus's disability, not evidence of his ability. Thank you, judges.
Mr. Stein, thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.